Okay, here we go. Okay, so we'll start on the front row. You have something, Mother? You don't have one yet? You haven't read it yet? Get ready, Gibora.
Much in every way. But one specific place, I really enjoyed the footnote between 46 and 47, number 60, where it talked about joy and about Deuteronomy being a book of joy.
Yes.
I hadn't really thought about that, but it makes so much sense. And it's, you know, the second recitation for Moses, you know, giving the children of Israel the Torah. And it just, there's so many things in it that I have never seen it until I read that. And
right.
I mean, that was one place. There's many places I've got marks. I've got my pages all. So that's just one place.
Okay.
But, oh wait, though, there's one more thing. In the back, the last 53, where it talked about being governed by the Hakamim, faithful obedience, and being trained for an office in the community.
Mm-hmm.
The three mitzvot that are implicit here. It was like, before I even read that, I thought, well, you know, the whole thing of the whole parsha is about government, and it's about being governed by the Hakamim and being faithfully obedient. And then when I read that, I thought, oh, cool, I hadn't even read to be trained for an office in the community, but I put that together. Just in thinking about the whole Seder and the overall theme of it, and what was Peter thinking?
Right.
What was he thinking when he picked out this?
Right.
And mountain and government. That was the two things that connected.
Yeah, very good.
So, anyway, that's kind of what my mind thought on.
Very good. Look at page 50. I think I got it highlighted in yours. Since joy or simcha is mentioned 12 times in the book of Devarim.
I didn't catch it there. I caught it on the footnote.
It's only mentioned once in the previous Torah books, but 12 times in that.
Uh-huh.
Which is a very interesting thing that we'll ask a question about later. Okay?
Well, see, that footnote says that I got it in the footnote first.
There you go. Very good. Okay, Alon Suriel, Your Honor.
I'm going to say, I've read this place, but I think actually on page 50, where to me it's kind of like we've got to honor our leaders, we've got to be faithful in our serving God. But on page 50, it says, my brethren, practice of Torah is not a life of singularity.
Yes.
Being a Torah observant person means belonging to the community.
Of Jewish people. Love the Torah.
Absolutely. I think I wrote something like that once. Very good. Very good. Okay. Anybody on the internet? No? Yes?
I do.
Okay, I don't know about you.
In your commentary on page 50?
Yes.
Right under the my brethren?
Yes.
Practice of Torah is not a life of a singularity. Being a Torah observant person is belonging to a community of good people who love Torah. I didn't really quite understand this for a long time until we came to Tennessee and Murray, and that really brought it into focus for me.
Did you find some people that loved the Torah?
I think almost.
Did you ever see San Francisco Kid?
Yeah.
What is that? It's some kind of Torah. Would you die for this Torah? Yeah. The Indians are trying to cook him on the steak, and he said, yeah, I'll die for it. Okay, any other comments before we, Sheba?
Yeah, mine was about the rehearsals. I know that I spoke with you about it the other day, but I never kind of put it together until now that the description of the temple was also part of the rehearsals.
Yes.
Can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit more?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Solomon builds this temple, and the temple is fashioned after the Mishkan, or the tabernacle. So, of course, what has to happen is first you need to understand the tabernacle and all the functions of all the things that go on in the tabernacle. And then you see, you know, like a graduation in the first temple, and then a major elaboration in the second temple. But everything from the number of steps, the way you approach for example, when you go up the steps, especially in the 15 steps, which is it looks like a semicircle in front of the court of the men. It comes out of the court of the women going in there. So you come up, and when you come up, you come up the steps, and then you go for a long step. Then you come up three shorter steps, and then you go for a long step. And when you say, well, why? It's because the steps are trying to tell you to stop and contemplate where you're going. So you don't just rush up the steps and, you know, okay, I'm going to approach God. You have to stop and meditatively think about the fact that you're going to see God and you're going to approach God. So there are many little things like that. For example, one great big misnomer is that the veil inside of the temple was rent in two. Okay, it wasn't the temple, it wasn't the parochet, it wasn't the curtain that went to the Holy of Holies, because that was two curtains. And they were three cubits apart. So a man could walk through that corridor. So what you had to do is you came in, turned to the left, and the curtain, the first curtain was shorter than on that end than the other. So you turned right and you walked down the corridor between the two curtains, and then you turned left and you came into the Kodesh Kodeshim, the Holy of Holies. All these things are set up to tell you, you know, how to communicate with God. Nothing, when you look at the Torah, the number of chapters that is devoted to the construction of the Mishkan are over 50 chapters. So it's the greatest subject in the Torah, is the building of that. So then you study the sacrifices. What do you get out of the sacrifice? Who gets what? Etc. So there's so many things that you can't... So it was the Cisco Kid. Is that the name of the movie? Or
Cisco Kid.
Cisco Kid, yeah, okay. All right. Okay, page 46. Any other comments, questions? I don't know, Avner, did you have something you were...
I was just going to say on page 53, I learned a new Greek word. And I feel like a beginner. Telos.
Telos,
refers to the life, work, or purpose in which we judged by God. And so, I don't know, I've been thinking about my life work, and I just thought that just to be different, you know, telos.
Yeah, and it the word work is ergon, and so you have an ergon telos, and that means that you have a perfect or a completed work. And so perfect, not to use the idea of Western thinking and, you know, something being perfect. Something being perfect in Hebrew means something that's mature. Okay? Because not everybody can do everything. I don't even pretend to try to do the Psalms. I don't pretend to try to do the Torah Seder. I work on the Nazarene Codicil. Now, I have to know the Psalms, and I have to know the Torah Seder, but to make a commentary on those things, that's not my job. So, being perfect means you know your job, and you do your job, and etc. Okay? A couple of comments on page 46 I will make. I don't say this as tactfully as I know how to say it. Whenever you start reading or hearing, people say, we got 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 10 years, 20 years, 120 years. I don't care what they say. As soon as they put a number on it and they say this is such and such, throw it out. Immediately. Throw it out. Get rid of it. It's of absolutely no value. So, the point is, many, many years ago, I asked a pastor about some of the things that were supposed to take place at the end time. And the gentleman told me, he said, I don't know. He said, you'll never know, and nobody else knows, so live today like it's your last day. So, if you're doing what you're supposed to do, you're faithful to your occupation, I'm speaking of Torah right now, then you don't worry, because the thing is, God is in control, and there's nothing you can do to change what He has planned anyway. And if He wants me to suffer and die for it, then you can kick and cry and all that. Moses wanted to see the promised land too. And he was on a much higher spiritual plane than I am. So what can I say? Okay? So whenever it starts talking about that kind of stuff, just kind of, go on. Okay? One other thing that I was somewhat interested in here is in the Tosefta. Said, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then you know that the desolation has come near. Then those in Yehuda must flee to the mountains. So then Yehuda is the land just north of where the temple sits. He said, and those inside must depart, and those in the fields must not enter into it. In other words, don't go back to Jerusalem. Why? Because these are the days of vengeance, so that all things that are written can be fulfilled. Woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing their babies in those days. For there will be great distress on the land and the wrath against these people. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and will be led captive into all the nations. And Jerusalem will be trampled down by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles is complete. So, in other words, the people, the Jewish people that are not in Jerusalem are safer than the ones that are in, because God is said He will trample Jerusalem to nothing. And that being said, it's very much like the first redemption. Where were the Jewish people?
In Goshen.
In Goshen.
How does this read in like typical? Where it says until the time of the Gentiles were fulfilled, is that what someone would get if they picked up the King James Version?
Yeah.
Okay. So my question is this. I guess based on a conversation I had earlier this week, or in the last week, when we're talking about the times of the Gentiles being fulfilled.
The question has to be.
I got a lot of questions, but they may not be what you're looking for. The question is, you've got times of the Gentiles has to be fulfilled, but then that should indicate for those that believe in replacement theology, that replacement theology is not valid. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that was my question, is how that, because that just like stood out.
Not unless that's all you know.
Yeah.
It makes total sense to them, because that's all they know.
But that right there, even if all I know is Nazarene Coast still, that right there should say, wait a minute, what does this mean?
Yeah, but the question has to be first, who are the Gentiles? Who is being sought, and what does it mean that they have a time frame, and after that time frame it's said and done?
I don't know. I can't really answer how they look at that, because even when I was a young child, and I knew both sides of my family, you know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't have...
The Gentiles that we're looking for are not just any Gentiles. We're not out here banging on the street just looking for everyone that we see. We're looking for the lost sparks. We're looking for the ones that have the Nefesh Yehudi inside of them, the Jewish spirit, Jewish soul inside of them, and those are the ones we're trying to harvest. We're not looking for every John Doe on the planet.
But that's what it means at the time of the Gentiles. It means when we can get all those sparks from, that's the time of the Gentiles. It's not like
so here he's saying that you don't, you're not going to be in Jerusalem. So if you're not in Jerusalem, where are you at?
Well, where did God put you?
Huh?
Where did God put you? You're in the
nations. You're in the middle of the nations, and what are you doing? You're hunting for the Gentiles, and when the time of the Gentiles is done, then you can go back to Jerusalem.
Right. But that wouldn't be until after this. And when we talk about dates, I may be getting a little off track here, and I apologize. Correct me and corral me if I am. But when we talk about certain dates on our calendar, God moves. Certain things happen repeatedly, types of things, throughout history. So when you're looking at that...
How many times has the abomination of desolation taken place already? So you understand that, you know, you can say the abomination of desolation, that it's going to come to pass. Say, yeah, how many times?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So this isn't, like, we read this, and traditionally we may have understood some that it's just one-time event. But we're not looking at a one-time event here, are we? We're looking at a over and over. So then
how many times was the temple
destroyed? Exactly.
Et cetera.
Okay.
Okay, let's go on.
All right, there you go. That's what I needed to know. Thank you.
All right, on page 46, my brethren, be governed. Okay? Footnote 59 says, to be led, to go before, to be a leader, to rule, to command, to have authority over, etc., be a prince with regal power. This is very important, because this is actually how we understand the word doulos, which, you know, I think I said last week, doulos is, you know, Hakam Yaakov says he's a servant, he's a courtier. And, you know, how ludicrous is it to say that, you know, he's the guy in the bottom of the boat rowing the boat? What value is that? You know, you're saying I'm insignificant. Yeah, we're all insignificant, but that doesn't mean that we don't have a job.
Somebody's got to row the boat.
Somebody's got to row the boat. I watched the guy come out there.
Across the river, so that his business got the most important job there is.
I watched a guy come out and hook his engine up to his car today, and his engine pulled car to town. It was Amish. He hooked his horse up to the buggy, and that was his engine to get to town. Okay, so number one, be governed. Okay, we'll work through some of this in a few minutes. So, I mean, obviously, immediately you understand that we're in a hierarchical system, a governmental system, and that the system that we are talking about is a system of understanding and delegating and communicating the Torah. Okay, back to just above the first highlighted set of words on the right-hand column of Mordecai or Mark. It says, let them be ready, readily understand, then those in Yehuda escape to the mountains. The mountains, the people will think that they can go from this place to that place. Not mountains, but different governments, and be safe. Okay, so the understanding of the government is prevalent in Chacham Yahud's mind. And so he said, be governed. Now, you can read the translation in your King James, and it says something different. I don't know what it says. Okay. And then it says, with refreshing joy, or by or with refreshing joy. Now, this is where the rubber meets the road. Because if you don't have joy in the Torah, and study the Torah, acceptance of the Torah, then something's wrong. Basically, I'm going to say it like this. No condemnation to anyone intended, but you got your priorities in the wrong place. Okay? It happens to all of us. Don't think I'm picking on anybody. But we are to look into the Torah with refreshing joy. And I was speaking with someone this afternoon, and I said the Torah is the DNA of the cosmos. So, you know, in the 60s, in the late 60s and the early 70s, into the 70s sometime, you know, we really, as a country, we started looking into Eastern religions. And one of the things that they stressed highly was being in balance with nature. Okay, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that statement. I don't care if it was Hare Krishna that said it, of course, all of this information you know came from Abraham. Okay, as he gave this information, this Sodic information to his sons, the sons of Keturah, and it says he sent them to the east. And to this very day, they bear the name Brahmins. And so you should say, who's a Brahmin?
Descendant of Abraham.
Mm-hmm. So, trying to not fight with the force of nature is very important. But the point being that the force of nature is the Torah. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, when you're governed with refreshing joy or by refreshing joy, you're governed by the appropriate government, then you can have refreshing joy. And what he's trying to say here is you have refreshing joy when you enter various tests. I want to tell you something right now that you need to get in your understanding, because James Yaakov, Chacham Yaakov, will make it very clear, and I'm going to bang the drum quite frequently when we get into that set of passages, but it did not say temptations. Because God never, ever, 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 never, ever, ever tests you or tempts you to do something contrary to the Torah. So, then the big question is, who is tempting me to do something contrary to the Torah?
Our
Yetzer Hara. Plain and simple. This is like a spoiled child that wants to lay down and throw a temper tantrum because they don't want to do this. Now, one of the things that everybody has been taught in the past is that, you know, it's the devil, the devil, the devil, the devil. First of all, just get rid of that thinking immediately. When you hear the words in your mind, I wish I had, you fill in the blank, and you know that it's not appropriate, then who do you have to blame? But you know that when it said, I wish I had, it's you speaking to yourself. It's your Yetzer Hara speaking to your Yetzer HaTov. I wish I had an ice cream.
I've learned I'm on his side on that, sorry.
Okay. So, we will learn a whole lot more about this and we'll shake your tree real good in a few weeks. Okay? Because you're going to come to an awareness of some things that you need to really understand. And it's so amazing, in my mind, it's so amazing that these things are clear in the Nazarene Codicil, but they've been hijacked and okay? Now, so we know that the testing of your faithful obedience, so God will allow you to be tested to see what your faithful obedience is. Are you faithfully obedient to Him? Look at page 52. Footnote 87. God kept telling Abraham, He said, you're going to have a son. So Abraham suffers 10 trials, 10 tests. God tells him to leave his homeland to be a stranger in the land of Canaan. Does that sound like in any way that he was tempting him to sin? Mm-hmm. It most certainly was pushing him out of his comfort zone, but it was not putting him into sin. Immediately after his arrival in the promised land, he encounters a famine. I don't know if anybody's ever heard Bill Cosby do the Noah routine. Have you ever heard that?
No.
He tells him to, you know, he's talking like he's talking to Noah. Mm-hmm. He tells him to build a boat. And Noah starts, Bill Cosby is Noah, starts saying, no, I ain't going to build this boat. And he said, how long can you tread water? So in other words, you got a choice. Okay? But you know, God put you in this new land and all of a sudden, you know, it's got a famine in the land. You say, man, and so in Bill Cosby's routine, he says, is there anybody else up there? He didn't like the answers he was getting, okay? So, number three, this Egyptian sees his beloved wife Sarah and bring her to Pharaoh. Abraham faces incredible odds and battles five kings, actually. He marries Hagar after not being able to have children with Sarah. God tells him to circumcise himself at an advanced age. Then the king of Gerar captures Sarah, intending to take her for himself. Dr. Elisheva will tell you that she was not 21 and she was so beautiful. They were still...
No, just kind of a humorous joke here. Maybe she had some really good Eastern genes.
Eastern genes?
Well, you know, like Oriental. Because I've got a friend that is in her 70s, and that girl does not look like she is out of her 40s, and that is no joke.
God, now after he has this child, number eight, God tells him to send Hagar away after having a child with her. His son Ishmael becomes estranged. Then God tells him to sacrifice his dear son Yitzhak upon the altar. Okay. Faithful obedience. We can use a word that the Torah and the Nazarene Codicil uses in a roundabout way, and that is fidelity. Okay? And, for example, as His Eminence has taught you in Matthew, it talks about the woman taken in adultery. It is only a metaphor here. But the question can be asked, if the woman didn't go sleep with the man, is she still being faithful to her husband?
Say
again.
Possibly, but
possibly
not. Depends on if he knows.
Depends on if he knows?
Yes. Because
no. And no, not at all.
You don't think so? Nope.
But we're talking about the negative side. Mm-hmm. You know, don't go sleeping with anybody else. But that's not the whole sum of fidelity. What's the rest of the situation?
Be with your husband and treat him as he's supposed to be treated.
Okay. So in other words, I hope you get the rest of the point. Okay? Being faithfully obedient to God means acting in a positive way. Not just keeping yourself from sin. It means doing what God has commanded. Well, God, I lived my whole life and I didn't do any of the negative commandments. You know, I didn't do anything. And someone asked last week, what is static religion? That's static. You're just treading water. You're just making, recycling air. Okay? All of this does what? It produces endurance. And Matthew said, only if you endure to the end. Look at footnote 64. Page 47, yes. Footnote 64.
Does your Eminence ask where mine is at?
Yeah. 64 is on 47?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that's where I wanted.
That's where your inspiration was.
Oh, that was your inspiration?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Very good. So that means you start out part of the way and you get tired and... You know, these one of the things I find fascinating is, you know, you could say whatever you want about these nomads, but this one documentary I watched is that out in the middle of the desert, there is an oasis. It's like in, I don't know, in Africa or wherever. In the middle of the desert, there's an oasis, and they're taking these camels. They got a camel train, and they're headed out there for them to... They have to stop there in order to make the trek on to wherever they're going. But they have to know where the oasis is in the middle of the desert, and all you can see is nothing but sand dunes.
And the sand dunes shift depending on the weather.
So... In the thing, that there is an elder lady who's been through this process, and this little caravan happens to be nothing but women. And the elder lady, she knows exactly how to get there. But she has her 12-year-old daughter that she's training, and she puts the daughter in the front and said, "You lead the way." And the daughter is on her camel in the front, and she leads them right to the oasis. So the thing is, you know, if you get to the middle and you haven't found the oasis, you know, then you think it's time to turn around and go back.
I know it's probably rhetorical, but we really wouldn't want to go, if we can't find the oasis spiritually, turn around and going straight back isn't going to help you.
No.
You've got to find where you're supposed to be going and alter your course, but don't turn around and go back there to where you were.
Yeah, because you accomplished nothing. Elizabeth, what is the name of the movie with Ethan Hawke where he goes into space? You know, him and Uma Thurman are in there.
Yeah, and what's
this
place? I can't think of the name.
Yeah,
Jude Law.
Jude Law,
yeah.
What?
Jude Law's crippled. He's in a wheelchair, and Ethan Hawke has some kind of disease.
Heart disease,
and they don't think he's fit for anything.
So they go through this process of determining who can go into space and who cannot. And Ethan Hawke in the movie is not qualified because he has a heart defect. But his brother, who is an inspector in this process, they swim out to a buoy. And his brother can't keep up with him. And there's
Gattaca.
Nothing... Huh?
Gattaca.
And the brother can't keep up with Ethan Hawke in the movie. And he doesn't understand why, because Ethan Hawke has a heart defect. And Ethan Hawke tells him, "You know how I beat you? I didn't leave anything for the return. I spent it all to get here." And so this is the same way. We can't give up in the middle. Anyway, interesting movie. It's not filled with vulgarity and a lot of things that a lot of others are. Okay, so this produces endurance, okay, which obviously helps us go the whole way. And then we talked already briefly about the perfect work, the work of perfection that we have, of having completed. But look at here, it says the perfected work in making you fully equipped. So in other words, a boat says making them stand, but making them stand means that the rabbi understands the occupation of the Talmid and does what? Steers that Talmid in that direction. And if he finds that that Talmid is not suited to that, he does what? Nah, he trash cans him and says, "You're no good." No, he steers him in the direction until he understands exactly how it fits in. Okay? And then, at that point, we can stand and we won't be lacking anything. Page 50. In Devarim Deuteronomy, we are given a mitzvah.
A good deed.
A commandment to serve God joyfully. So it's not an option. It is an obligation to serve God and to do it with joy. So, if it's not joyful,
then you're not serving God right.
it's time to take an inventory and say, what am I doing wrong? And then when you take that inventory, you can say, oh, here's where this is. And I can tell you, like King David, don't ask God to tell you what it is. Because He will tell you. And keep telling you.
Be careful what you ask for, pray for. Because
He will keep telling you. Okay? So actually, in 76, you will see this is in Devarim 28:47, which you can see at the top on page 52. Rashi's. Now, let me say one thing. Gibran Zahava was asking, you know, will it say the same thing in the King James? Not always. Okay? In this particular case, that particular statement was similar to what the King James says. The King James is very, very faithful. And so, you know, short of some of its archaic language and short of some of its religious language, in other words, its Protestant language, etc., some of those things and the agenda that was given to them at that particular time, you can find it considerably reliable. But I do not use, for example, here in page 52, I didn't use King James Version. I used the Rashi's translation. And sometimes we'll use Rambam or Ramban, etc. Okay? Look for the footnote, it'll tell you. Okay, so number one, it is a mitzvah to serve God joyfully. And that does not mean jumping up and down and screaming and hollering and yelling. One of the things that is my greatest joy in the day is to get home, the two cats, a dog, and my wife, and be able to study Torah. Okay? Now, this means that when we do not serve God in joyfulness, we're punished for our negativity and lack of obedience. What? How are we punished? Let you be controlled by your Yetzer Hara.
I was just going to say, because our Yetzer Hara has taken over and the flesh has decided that they're going to not obey God and not do what God
has So called. When the Yetzer Hara yields to it, then it's subjected to what? All of this business that it just detests. Yep. Inside, the spirit is screaming out, saying, So, how does the mitzvah relate to the present pericope of Hacham Yahu? The word simcha, joy, occurs more often in Devarim than any other book of the Torah. It is a fundamental theme of Deuteronomy, Devarim. The root simcha appears only once in each of the Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, but 12 times in the book of Devarim. Did anybody else pick up on 12 times? Why 12 times?
I was just wondering if there was something about the number itself.
The 12, everything.
12 tribes. James says this letter is to the 12 tribes. So as we said last week, James at that time knew exactly where they were. Everybody with me? Unlike today, we do not. But there's a good way to find out. If you suspect that someone has a Nefesh Yehudi, how can you tell? Cook him a pork chop. What's it going to say?
That's a good question. How would you, because some people, it would probably be kind of hard to find.
Well, they had some children. I don't know the origin of this story, but I heard it some time ago. Heard it from a rabbi, I believe, that was relatively well known. And they had taken some of the children during the time of the Holocaust, and they put them in a Christian environment. And they, an orphanage, thank you. And they said, well, how will we know these Jewish children, the ones that are Jewish in this community, when we come back to get them? And they said, you'll know. So they gather all the children together, and the individual rabbi, whoever, starts to recite the Shema, and all the little hands go. It's not hard to find the Jews out of the whole program.
Well, people who get excited about Hebrew, or people who get excited about something you tell them about the Torah being written, you know, was it spoken by God? What's, I had a young man ask me today, what was the first book written? I said, what does it matter what was written first? What about what was spoken first?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's my understanding that the shape of the universe is conal. What does that have to do with anything? You speak it and it goes out. Okay, when we have a precedent in the Torah, we must also understand that it dominates the Nazarene life. So, comes of Yaakov is saying with refreshing joy. You know, when you get up in the morning, Dr. Lesheva has been working with you on the morning prayers. Do you get up and say Modeani, or are you happy to be awake and be alive?
Something Rabbi Hegai taught us when he was teaching us prayers really blessed me and impressed me. He said, you know, there's, it takes you 12 seconds to say the Modeani. There's, and he said, that's exactly how long it takes your body to become awake to be able to stand.
Very good.
I never forgot that.
Yeah, very good. Therefore, we are to serve God with joy. And we have a precedent in the Torah. We must also understand that it dominates Nazarene life, as we said. Consequently, the command to serve God with joy relates to the present parakeet by way of subordination to the Torah and the mitzvot. The mitzvot related to the laws termed avodat Hashem, the love of God. Okay, this is much deeper than that. We'll go there in just a minute. Suppose that tomorrow morning you wake up, you say Modeani, you wash your hands, go to the bathroom, say the 15 blessings, and out the door you go to work or whatever. In the sky, a gigantic image appears. Some fat-bellied guy sitting with his legs crossed. I don't know what his name was. But he announces in an audible voice so everyone can hear him. You can hear him with your ears. And he declares that Buddhism is the correct way. What do you do?
Pray no mind. Shema.
Pray no mind.
Just keep living Jewish life, because guess what? It doesn't matter what the angels or whatever have said. Hakam Shaul says this in Galatians. He said, though we or an angel from another place has said anything different, let him be accursed.
I think of that scripture that says, though wars and rumors of wars come, you just keep on wanting. You just keep on living what God's called you to live.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because as I was saying to begin with, you know, when you start reading numbers and hearing people say, it's, you got this much time and that much time and all this business, you know, the world thought that, you know, the end was coming with the Y2K, right? You know what Dr. Elisheva and I did?
I slept through it.
We did. We just went to bed.
And I'm sure all of us knew at least one or two people, even if it was distant understanding of who they were, that were really surprised when everything didn't fall apart. So.
Yeah. Some people you might be amazed. His Eminence was like me. He just went to bed. He said he wasn't worried about it. And, you know, that was before I met His Eminence. And if I would have known it was him, I would have just had him on the BC. Because if the end of the world started, he's ahead of us in 16 hours or so in time. So
yeah.
If it would have started over there. And okay. All right. So let's... let's look page 50. The idea of serving God with joy means that someone has been feeding you with the Torah and you're finding a great interest in the Torah. It's doing something to you internally, lifting you, etc. And it is very much the same way when we stop and think about the fact that undoubtedly, albeit the sages say that, you know, Adam and Chava were actually born on the threshold of two worlds. Number one, they were born on the threshold of Shabbat. Okay, they were last creation to be made on the week Friday afternoon. And, of course, they immediately were subjected to Shabbat. But it leaves us in chapter 3, verse 8 of Bereishit, it leaves us with the idea that, you know, perhaps we say, you know, that they were created a couple of weeks before they failed God, etc. It says fundamentally that God, he came to them. And it says in the Ruach of the day. It does not say in the cool of the day. It says in the Ruach. So that means that there's a time when the voice is going out of the mouth. The Ruach is being spoke out of the mouth. And so that's what's happening now. That's what happens in all of our classes. The Ruach, the Spirit goes out. But we can also say it and understand it like this. It's not just the breath that is going out. It's a piece of the teacher that's going out to the students. And they're to receive a piece of what the teacher is teaching them. And so God understands this clearly. And so He has clearly shown us that we should cleave to the Hachamim. Now I'm going to show you a book. This is 613 by the Rambam. You are going to have a hard time finding this book. Okay, this is the positive. There are two books. The reason is they're out of print. But I can tell you, if you can find them, get them. Okay, because this is a valuable resource. What's going to happen is that they're going to come out with another version of this, okay, in the future. So that I'm pretty sure that's the case. I think that's what His Eminence told me.
By Rambam.
This is the Rambam, Maimonides, okay. There's a one volume that is positive, the 248, and one that's the negative.
What's the publishing house on that one?
I think it is. So I'm seeing no press.
All right, let me spell that.
Okay. There's another book, a series of books, five books, called Sefer HaChinuch. And that means the book of our education. And it is also vital, but, again, quite expensive. Okay. So I'm going to read here from this. Well, I'm just going to go down first through the commandments. Number three on the Rambam's list, Maimonides' list, is love of God, that you should have the love of God. So this is basically what we're saying, that you have the love of God here in being governed, and we'll show you that in a minute. And I'm not going to read through all the commentary. Number four, commandment number four, means to fear God. And he goes to great length to show you that it's not just being afraid that God's going to take a big stick and that he's going to whack you with it. Then commandment number five is to worship God. And commandment number six is to cleave to God. Okay? Now I will read you the first piece of this as I could read this whole paragraph. But I want you to understand what he says here. And he says, by this injunction we are commanded to mix with and associate with wise men, to be always in their company, and to join with them in every possible manner of fellowship, eating, drinking, business affairs, to the end that we may succeed in becoming like them in the respect of their actions, acquiring true opinions from their words. The injunction is contained in his words, exalted be he, and to him shalt thou cleave, which is repeated in the verse, and to cleave unto him. And the sifrei, to cleave unto him, means that you should cleave unto the wise men and to their disciples. Now, this wisdom has been from, for sure, the Torah. And its explanation here has been since the time of Maimonides, or the Rambam. But in contemporary society, they tell you if you want to be a successful person, you do what?
Lie, cheat, steal. You don't pay attention to the people, and you can't do that.
You hang out with people who are successful, and you watch what they do. Now, I'm not talking about...
Now, I'm just thinking, like, we're coming from one direction. Your direction's better.
Okay, so this is...
sarcastic, in case you didn't...
I know.
Well, it's not so much, but...
Okay, so you understand that if you want to know the Torah...
Hang out with somebody who knows Torah.
If that doesn't matter if they know two sentences more than you, hang out with them and then... Okay? So this is where we should actually find it a joyful thing to be wherever they're teaching the Torah. Now it's like this. Somebody comes to me and they say, Rabbi, I'm listening to this rabbi over here, and he's saying this, this, and this, and this. Okay. What do you want me to say? I don't know what that rabbi's saying. Because that's not who I listen to.
That kind of goes back to, you have not many fathers. If you're going to pursue something, pursue it. You don't go and... to two different churches, two different synagogues, and follow seven, eight rabbis. It doesn't mean you can't read and glean, but to...
Well, it's like this. I know what our rabbis teach. Mm-hmm. That I know. What some other rabbi teaches, so here and there I can say, I kind of know what that guy says, and I understand what he says. And if I, you know, if I start to listen to some rabbi, pretty soon, you know, usually I'll say, yeah, he doesn't know this, and yeah, he doesn't know that. Well, it's not to be negative about this individual. It's just like he doesn't know where we're at and what we're saying. And so I'll say it like this. Some people say, well, yeah, you know, I want to listen to this rabbi. I want to listen to that rabbi. You know, you can do whatever you want. I advise against that. And I'll say quite plainly, as His Eminence has said, what? You think that we haven't given you enough work?
I'm just going to say, if I do all the work you guys give me, I don't have time to do anything else.
And that's the whole point. That's the whole point.
You never sleep.
So, I'm saying, I am not condemning other rabbis by any means, but I know what we teach and I know what we're trying to forward. And if you can master that, you're doing wonderful. Okay? So, page 50, my brethren, practice of the Torah is not a life of singularity. So, in Judaism, you know very well. How did Yeshua teach us to pray?
Our Father.
Our. Plurality. It wasn't just, you know, my Father who is in heaven, blah, blah, blah. It's us four and no more. My name is Jimmy. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Being a Torah observant person means belonging to a community of Jewish people who love the Torah. Thus, we've stated that we must cleave to God through the Torah scholars as a means of drawing close to God, as it is said, my brethren. Now, I want to make one more set of comments before we close. Context of leadership, page 51. This is from commentary on the Torah portion at my Jewish learning. He said, it falls to the Midrash to examine Moshe's words and not only offer interpretations of his meanings, but to construct leadership principles based on what he said and done. Many Midrashim, Hebrew plural Midrash, taking the use of Moshe as an example of what constitutes ideal leadership. In his address to the people, Moshe tells them that he is not able by himself to bear this burden of acting as a judge in all cases. Question. Have you ever heard anything like that in the Nazarene Codicil?
Yeah.
What? Where?
Well, all right, maybe not. No, Nazarene Codicil. Not exactly the same, but they were...
Okay, it doesn't have to be exactly the same, but we have something very similar to that in the Nazarene Codicil. Okay?
Is it... Okay, I don't want to finish, so sorry.
Anybody else?
I don't know where it is. But is it the 2x2s?
There was...
The 2x2s? What about the 2x4s?
No. It's where he starts... I'm like her. I'm
sending out 2x2s. So you're talking about when he started sending the disciples out 2x2s.
Yeah, but it's...
They
set up leadership
in
so that two men didn't have to serve tables.
Yes.
And
Acts chapter 7.
Okay.
Acts chapter 7.
Okay. Is that what you were... I mean, this is the first example that I can recall.
Well, you have something very similar there, because what is happening is that the disciples, the apostles, are devoting themselves to prayer and to Torah study.
Right.
And so they have...
They left serving tables. They choose somebody else to do a different job so that they can get about...
Yeah, the tables... Tables means that it doesn't mean waiting on people. It's waiting on the judges to do what the judges say. So what's happening here is that the Talmudim, the disciples, are being elevated to the place of Hachamim, and then they need Pakidim to carry out their orders, etc. So there's some similarity there. But the thing that I found that was almost, you know, very much a statement like that says, Moshe tells them that he was not able to bear the burden by himself. In Acts chapter, that's on page 51,
right,
middle of the paragraph. In Acts chapter 15, okay, you know that the thing that's going on here is that there are Gentiles turning towards God.
Oh.
Okay? And I'm reading in actually verse 12, the end of 11 into verse 12. Hacham Tzafet continued saying, so why are you putting God to the test by placing on the neck of the Talmudim, not the Gentiles, a yoke that neither our fathers nor we have the strength to bear? Does it sound any way similar?
It sounds like mm-hmm.
So Hacham Tzafet is speaking about the Gentiles, but he is basically saying, look, we're going to have to be judging the Gentiles, much like Moshe is judging the Jewish people. But the thing is, we cannot judge Gentiles if they don't keep the Torah. Mm-hmm. Right? So you can't judge a Gentile and say you cannot eat a pork chop if he's going to remain a Gentile. If he's going to remain a Gentile, then so be it. But he is welcome to come to the synagogue, but we won't ever go to his house to eat. And he can never bring anything to the synagogue to eat. Right? You understand?
Yes.
We don't know what his kitchen looks like. It's not saying that there's something wrong with the individual. It's saying that his kitchen is not right. So, what he is saying here, we cannot let them continue to be Gentiles and bear the yoke of having to be their judges as well. So Moshe says, you know, look at all of this tribe, 600,000 Jewish people. And Hacham Tzafet is saying the same thing. Isn't it interesting that even though he's speaking about Gentiles, he's understanding like Hacham Yaakov in saying, Gentiles, people, those into the 12 tribes in diaspora, he knows who they are. So, you have to understand this context. It does not say, Acts 15 does not say you're putting a yoke on them that they can't bear. It says you're putting a yoke on us that we nor our forefathers can. They couldn't do it. In essence, we could say if Moshe couldn't do it, Hacham Tzafet is not pretending even remotely to be close to Moshe. But I'm going to tell you, he was absolutely a spiritual giant. And even in Orthodox circles where you can find up to somewhere near the time of Rambam, he was venerated. We just had a fast a week or two ago called the 10th of Tevet. Okay, it was supposed to be for the 9th of Av. I said Tevet, I mean Av. There's one that we say that it's why do we do that?
Mourning.
Yeah, we're mourning who? We're mourning the loss of Hakam Tevet. Okay, let me review quickly. Number one, no time limits. Number two, don't go to Jerusalem when all hell breaks loose, because that's not where you belong. That's what he said there, clear. And there will be a time when we stop hunting for the Gentiles, and when we stop hunting for them, most likely then we could go back to Jerusalem. In Yaakov, he makes the following points clear. Number one, be governed. So that means that they, no matter where you at, you have to have some form of government. When we're speaking with our congregation or congregations in general, then we understand that we are looking for the Hachamim to teach us and guide us. It is a mitzvah to have refreshing joy. If you don't feel that in the Torah, you stop and do a little introspection. But I can tell you that sometimes people have to go through things that are difficult to go through, and they have to find their way. And sometimes it's a very difficult thing to find your way and be comfortable in your own shoes, so to speak. There's a lot to say about that, but we'll continue on. Tests are not temptations. Who is the tempter? Isn't it interesting, you know, that when we stand in the judgment, the Yetzer Hara is going to be there? And he's going to say, do you know what this guy did? And so the voice shifts from possessive to
accusational.
Yeah. I sure wish I had a... And that's the way it speaks. That's the way it tempts. And then when we get in the judgment, he'll say, I told him not to do that. I told him. Okay, so understand the difference there. Faithful obedience and fidelity. Fidelity means positive action as well as restraint. Dr. Ellis.
Action as well as what?
Say that again.
As well as restraint.
Oh, okay. I thought you said brute strength, but I'm
going to
have
to find
strength.
Dr. Elisheva can tell you, as I have experienced in my life, that when you learn to lift weights, the only way to become stronger is to bring you to the place that the muscle fails. And as it regenerates, it makes it to where you can do more, lift more. 107 pounds. When I was in high school, I could bench 190 pounds. But how did I get there? I couldn't do it at first, and I couldn't do it today. Okay, the perfect work, as Adonai Vener was talking about, is a work that brings us to a place of maturity. And that work can bring us to a place of maturity that is your place of maturity and not someone else's. And then, obviously, being fully trained means, as Perkei Avot 1:1 says, make the disciple to where he can stand. Make him capable of studying the Torah for himself. And then the thing that I found so interesting was that Hakam Yaakov says, or the book of Devarim has 12 times the word joy. And Hakam Yaakov was speaking to the 12 tribes.